accessible, and talk a little about some of the, I would say, unique, maybe alternative kind of materials that you're talking about using in some of this as a secondary bid option?
Sure. So all of the trails are ADA accessible with the exception of, let's see, this trail right here, this is a mulch trail. This is not specifically ADA accessible. All the paved trail is, and then all of the primary trail is here, the secondary trail here. If you will, there's three levels of trails here. There's the wide paved, and then there's the kind of the secondary trail, which is either a limestone, a crushed limestone, which meets the ADA standard, and this has been graded to meet the ADA standards down to the stream, or it's a kind of tertiary trail, which is just even a smaller, yet not quite as wide, just a more what's the word I'm looking for? But a more intimate experience, just to walk in the woods here. we had asked for an alternate in this bid request. We're asking for an alternate to do sections of this secondary trail here, replace the limestone with kind of a porous. It's called a filtered pave product, or a name to it, but it's a recycled glass product that then has a binding agent added, so it becomes a firm surface, and that's a porous surface. So we're asking for for an alternate bid on that, and that would address. Where that would go on areas of this trail that are maybe steep, maybe have a little higher grade that we'd like to not have run the risk of limestone migrating, or areas close to the stream. So really areas like that, we're asking for the bidders to give us an alternate bid on that other material.
So with limestone the rest of the way around, that's what the bikes are going to be riding on also, is limestone.
The major trails here are all paved.
They're all paved. So again, the section that you're looking at, so this, just having limestone on.
Yeah, so the limestone right now is this trail here.
Okay.
I don't know if you can see my...
I've got it. But
the rest of it was.
It's paved already.
So this is limestone here. This is limestone here. This is, and this is. This main arterial trail here and on out is all 10 feet wide paved trail.
And just to repeat, so I heard correctly, even among the parts that are limestone, this $91,000 for the alternate filter pave, it's called?
Yep.
Okay, that would only be certain sections. So not everything.
So that would, yeah, so the filter pave with that amount would essentially replace the limestone from this point to here to right about here, and I believe that's it. So from here down to here.
And so the rationale for having an alternate bid is see what the cost actually would be, but it would greatly reduce the maintenance required on limestone trail. So limestone trail, you're going to get the limestone moving, especially on steeper slopes or where there's any water. This would stay in place. It's also, as I understand it, more stable footing, especially on some of these sloped areas, which could be a potential advantage.
Well, yeah, and if you're also in a wheelchair or scooter, as I've had to use in the past.
Sure.
So yes, I also had that marked as my other comment point on this,
was
about if we could find other areas up above to help pay for that additional, because I can tell you limestone, while it's ADA approved, has a lot to do with it. It's a lot of maintenance to keep it truly for people, especially people who are partially mobile and using a cane. It's tricky.
But I think it's the right point. I think so I would hope that it's something we're going to be able to work in. We've got to see what the bid comes back.
Right.
This is not a... it's not a real widely used material. I mean, it's just kind of coming into its own. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of bid we get back. I appreciate that you guys put it into the bid as a possibility. possibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you.
So it's a nice material that we can use. Again, the impetus of this project is to demonstrate what's possible and to do it in an environmentally sustainable way. And so that material option meets those. It's a great demonstration project. It's a great alternative. We all know limestone has its problems. The reason limestone is so widely used is because of the price. Mm-hmm. These other products, it's hard to compete with that price.
And there are places that limestone is completely appropriate, that it can be maintained fairly easily. We just got to figure out how that all fits
right.
together.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Good.
So having said that, such as the, any other questions, we urge your approval to move forward and release this package to...
Well, your presentations, Mike, I guess I've never thought to look, and I have never asked, but how many parking spaces are at this facility?
So that's a good question. You know, when we first started talking about this project, that was, of course, one of our primary concerns at the beginning, is where we're going to put parking. It still is a concern. Right now, there's the parking lot around that hub building is designed as and was designed space-wise, size-wise, to accommodate the park use.
Right.
So right now, the main parking lot is around that that core facility.
Yes, the answer to the question is we're building zero parking places because they already exist.
Well, that allows you to put dollars against something else you'd rather do.
Yeah. And so if down the road we find out that we do need some additional parking, the master plan calls for a parking lot right here. And this is off of the middle roundabout right here. So the access lane would come in like this. There's already a curb cut in that roundabout for an access lane here.
Right.
But again, that's down the road. And
well, and actually, when we originally talked about this, we had parking and we had restrooms right there, and both of those came out fairly early.
Correct.
For now. Ryan, you haven't had much to say, man. Give us a good word.
Really unique project, 1.1 miles of paved trails there. We're excited to get some better quality paved trails in our park system. So a lot of thought and effort went into getting to this stage, and we're excited to see what it brings here. So we appreciate your guys' support, as always. And as a staff, I know we work really hard on these areas, and we did secure that REAP grant for this Phase 2 project. $468,000, I believe. So we always try to stretch our dollars as far as they can go. So appreciate your guys' support.
Absolutely. Questions for Mike?
No, pleased to see the solar component you were working in there. I'd like to think that's something that conservation is looking to put into other sites that we have, because that technology is only getting better, and it just allows us to do offsets of what we need to do to have a better visit.
Right, and so yeah, we're really pleased to be able to put that solar in there. Recognize that at the beginning it comes with a little higher price tag than running power, but at the same token, it's over the long run, it's more efficient and more sustainable.
I'm expecting to see Loris out there with her laptop plugged in, sitting at one of the picnic tables, just going
chilling, you know, but not in my office.
That's all the way from home.
I have nothing else.
Okay, so we're going to open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address the plan specifications and the potential authorization to release bids for Phase 2 of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. If you'd like to comment, come on up. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing, turn to the board. Board, our action today, if you're willing to take it, is to give authorization to release the bid packet and hopefully get to the point relatively soon where we've got bids to actually see what this would cost.
I would move that we release the bid packet for the phase two of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Center to solicit bids.
I would second that. And for setting a bid opening date of March 20th.
Thank you. I accept that. Friendly amendment.
Perfect. We've got a motion and a second to release the bid packet and set the bid opening for March 20th. Anything further for us?
So at that March 20th bid opening, Ryan will be here opening those bids with you with our engineer. And then the plan from there is to take that to the Conservation Board on the 26th and then back to this board on the 27th for consideration of contract.
It's a tight timeline. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything further? Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is approved. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
We're to additional items. Hopefully this one's kind of quick. We talked about it multiple times. Consideration of contract with COTS Systems to scan and host land records for $61,625 from our auditor, Lucy Martin.
Morning, Lucy.
Lucy.
Is it still morning?
Yes, it is.
Just barely. Count on you to help us with that. So last week we were going to deal with this, but it was still with the attorney.
Yes. Ethan Anderson looked at it. He finished his review on Tuesday, but not in time for the board meeting. He submitted changes, requested changes to COT, and they came back. They made all of the changes requested by Ethan, with the exception of one, which was about the limitation of liability. And Ethan's comment was that, you know, he would have preferred that our language was used, but it's not a deal breaker.
Okay.
So the revised contract was given to the board yesterday. All of the changes that were requested are shown in underline. The price did not change. The timeline did not change. Again, this is in my office's budget for FY19, but you had asked me to bring it this year to see if we could move up the timeline, so it is an unbudgeted item for FY18.
Right, but it'll be show as potential savings for 19.
Correct.
And it's something that, frankly, we need to have done.
Yeah, I mean, for disaster recovery, the liability issue, because the records would not leave this building and the custody of Story County, that's why it's, you know, it's not our preferred language in a contract, but it's also, you know, these are one of a kind items, so really, how do you put a price on? I don't know. It's an interesting legal question, but we don't need to get into that today.
So you're comfortable, Ethan's comfortable.
Yeah, Ethan was like, yeah, it's not his preference, it's not a deal breaker.
Good.
So.
Questions for Lucy?
None. I think that pretty much was covered from last meeting. And just refresh me on the timeline for, you know, approval of this to when they start, when they finish.
Once this is approved, then we would pay half the contract cost up front, and then the rest would be billed as they give us deliverables, but then our maintenance costs would not start until it was turned over to us. So they can do the scanning this fiscal year yet.
Right.
But we will probably not see a finished product until probably August or early September.
We're stepping into March this week, so it's really not that far.
So, But we would host them here to do the scanning of all the documents. So those, again, that's what gives me the greatest comfort, is they will not leave my custody.
Okay. If there's no other questions, I take a motion.
I would move consideration of a contract with COTS Systems to scan and host our land records for $61,625.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
Thank you.
Next is discussing consideration for replacement of a heat pump at the Justice Center by Mechanical Comfort for $23,660. You know, we always get to the Justice Center, I think, man, that's our new building. But really, it's our most heavily used building,
yeah.
And it's not new anymore.
Yeah, it's also got some of our most different systems in it, too. Not your typical office building.
I want to meet the architect that designed the Justice Center someday. Just to see.
Morning, guys.
I'm going to bear with you and bring a picture up. We're going to kind of start off a little bit by, all right, great. too much. To kind of start off initially with what that heat pump is and kind of what it's doing up on the roof before we get in.
Yeah, what is it doing up on the roof?
Exactly.
Is it like negative 20 when you take this picture? That's got to be
no, this was, I think, the 18th of this month, so it wasn't that cold. But this here is the actual heat pump. And given it's a public building and it's a jail facility, we got to bring so much fresh air in. So this little guy off to the side is what's bringing the fresh air in, and the little thing in the middle is what basically there to join the two pieces of equipment together. It's got some diffusers, louvers in it to direct the air. But essentially, the heat pump that's up there wasn't factory designed to have fresh air on it. So they added it. If I can zoom in, you can kind of see what we're dealing with. Now I'm going to try and I'm probably going to be able to pull it off. I'm not real technologically advanced. But essentially, they cut a hole in the side of that unit right there and attached, attached that center section. I mean, they literally cut a hole in the side of that unit and stuck this thing on there. And the other thing, that fresh air unit, sorry, I found the microphone for everybody. It doesn't preheat or pre-cool the incoming outdoor air. So it's got what they call an energy wheel in it, which is kind of my picture down at the bottom. It's a wheel that sits inside that housing. Where'd my pointer go? And get my elbow on. I'll try not to be too shady here. And it rotates in there, and as you bring building air through that wheel, it collects the tempered air. And then as that wheel spins, and it exhausts your building air through them louvers there, and then it'll draw our fresh air in on that side. I apologize for that.
So everything we just heated or cooled, we send outside.
Yeah.
And then everything that we're going to heat or cool, we're pulling from outside.
Yeah, and you're using that wheel to temper that outdoor air, which it's only in a perfect world probably going to raise that that outdoor air coming in or lower it by about 10 degrees Fahrenheit. Okay, so that kind of, you got any questions on the rundown of how?
Well, I've got a ton of questions.
Oh, I'm sure. Hopefully I have the answer for you. So, back on January 1, this particular heat pump decided it wasn't going to work that day, which it was 20 below zero out that day, and this particular unit services the Northwest jail cells at our jail facility, which is 16 jail cells. So it essentially left us with 16 cells that were not usable, and we was able to absorb them in other parts of the jail so that we didn't have to send anybody away.
But just clarify for us, so we've got a system that's built that has no redundancy at all. Once it goes down, we just lose that part of the building.
Yep. When it went down, we couldn't maintain the space temp at a level to where we could inhabit it with people. We were able to maintain it at a level to keep pipes from freezing, because there's, of course, above all them jail cells, there's sprinkler pipes that have water in them, and the main water line that services the half of the jail, the showers, runs above those cells, so there's, like Rick pointed out, there's no redundancy to it. When it goes down, it goes completely down. There's no heat whatsoever. Given the extreme conditions we were in, we ended up calling the contractor in to see if there was anything they could do. And they were able to get it to function at about 25% capacity, which, you know, it was putting out 40-degree air. It's better than 20-below-degree air. But we still couldn't use the place, the facility. And it's not a common piece of equipment, so they didn't have replacement parts on their truck with them. Given the age of the equipment, the replacement part was a factory-only item because it wasn't available anywhere local, and they had to make it to order. So that left us, we got the part in the unit back up and running, I think it was a week and a half later. And then it ran for until the 10th of this month and decided that it wasn't going to work that day as well. But when it went down on the 10th, it was a Saturday again. It wasn't near as cold, but it was cold enough to where we couldn't use the jail cells. And in this particular instance, they had to relocate two inmates to a different facility at a cost to the county. So they got it up and running, but it's currently only running at about 75% to 80% capacity. It's still not 100% fixed. We put about $4,000 into it today to find out what else is wrong with it. It's probably a minimum of another $3,000 to put into a particular unit. So I'm requesting it's time to replace it. And the unit we're looking at replacing it with is a conventional rooftop unit.
So actually made to go on the roof?
Made to go on the roof.
We're going to have to cut any big holes in it? Or is it
no, because it comes factory with the fresh air.
I'm being facetious.
I know. It's got the fresh air component built into the unit from the factory. Plus, it's got redundancy on both the heating and the cooling side of it. Plus, I added a dehumidification cycle to this unit because given the facility and the amount of people that are in it and the showering, humidity is something we battle all summer long. So it was about a $3,000 option to the unit, which is included in that $3,660 is the dehumidification cycle to help at least in this section alleviate the humidity problem we fight in the summer months because of the amount of fresh air we got to bring into the unit. Mm-hmm.
You're pulling some gas up there as well.
Yeah. So yeah, part of that is a new gas line out of the mezzanine, which is a mechanical room that's on the second level of the jail that's kind of centrally located, and it's got where our water heaters for the jail sit, so the gas is there, and this includes sizing that so we could add to it later. So that's part of the cost, is because as we look at upgrading the whole system on that,
this isn't the only unit we got up there.
No, it's one of 13 that are identical to this, that have that same inconvenient fresh air unit hanging off the side of it. So
some would say jerry rig.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would use that term.
Thanks for just did.
Yeah.
Again, I'd like to meet the architect.
Yeah. We'll just go with it's not ideal.
Well, but our responsibility is to deal with what we got in front of us. Looks to me like you brought us a solution. Board questions or comments?
Everything mechanical has a life cycle. What's the life cycle out of this replacement unit?
Yes.
Are they telling you a year with these HVAC use?
What's that?
Everything like this has a life cycle proposed. I mean, what? How much, you know, as
this one's negative 6 months.
Okay. I mean, they talk any numbers, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
20 years.
20 years.
The standard conventional rooftop unit has got a average life expectancy of 20 years. It's got significantly less moving parts than the current system that's up there, and all replacement parts are locally available. So,
well, that was a win because we struggled to get when January 1st that we were waiting to have things shipped to us.
Like I said, and I really had to really plead to get, because in the factory that it was that this replacement parts are manufactured in, they also, the 2nd, January 2nd, is a holiday for them as well, so the Tuesday after the day it went down, they were still closed. And then on Wednesday, it was borderline begging them to, how fast can you make this part and get it to me? So,
yeah. So, board, we need to keep in mind this unit, but we also need to keep in mind the other dozen units that we have up there, because the reality is, while these things are only, 17 years old, we're starting to see that they're getting to the end of their life, and that's where we are.
I'd like to add, given what we're asking the units to do, because we're asking them to do things they were not engineered to do. So right there, that's going to cut their life expectancy right down. And that's where we're at with them right now. And like Rick pointed out, I wish it was the only one up there, but it's one of 13 that looked just like this one. And as we move on to looking at our options for the whole complex, there's different options available, but in a one-time replacement, right, I feel this is our best option. It's not ideal, but I think given the circumstances, it's the best and least expensive option we have with to go with right now.
Other questions for Joey?
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for what you did.
I would move consideration of the replacement heat pump at the Justice Center by Mechanical Comfort for $23,660 as presented.
I will second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Go, John. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Next is purchase of a power grip bucket from Ziegler for $14,950. This is another one of those items that came to us as part of the FY19 budget, and in looking at the way the outstanding job Darren has done managing money, we decided it would be possible to pull it up into this year's and take it out of 19. Darren, go ahead.
Same thing. We identified some savings in the current fiscal year. This was in our 19 asking anyway. So what it is, it's a power bucket grip that goes on our excavator, so we're not only be able to dig, but actually grab things, pipes, trees, load them into a truck. So, a useful tool for us.
So, yeah, you would use this one, no doubt.
Yeah.
Questions for Darren?
Nothing. I'm there if you want it.
Yeah, go.
I have no consideration the purchase of a power grip bucket from Ziegler Cat for $14,950.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Next, discussion and consideration of the purchase and installation of an emergency communication center furniture with option number 2 for $62,863. This is an item, Barry, that's come to us a couple times we've talked about, and we're finally to the point that they can actually supply it.
Yep, so I appreciate the board's time today, and communications operations manager Nick Rosenio will be here to answer any questions you guys might have. And yeah, my role in this is just to come and say this is something we've discussed before. We brought to you guys last year, and we had to do some things in order to be appropriate before we move forward. And so if you guys do have any specific questions about what we're doing or how we're moving forward with it, we've got the team here to answer it.
Super. More questions for the team?
None. And it was the prior discussions about this. It was very clear why you wanted it or needed it, I think is the best way to describe it. So none.
Okay.
I would agree, and I would agree.
All right, then one of you guys make a motion, please.
Okay, I would move that we purchase the system with the total cost, including the electrical quote, for a total of $88,636.96.
That's my motion. And Joby's office is going to help us on this. I see you're up here, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It was just, I was here in case there was questions about,
sure,
you know, like the electrical quote and what other things we was doing in this process.
All right.
You know,
and we got a hard cost on the 62863. It's a soft cost on the electrical. You feel comfortable with the soft cost?
Yes.
So what Morris has made the motion of is up to, hopefully we're going to spend a little less than that.
All right. Up to.
I'm good.
And you seconded?
I seconded.
Any further discussion? You've been sitting here watching the whole time. You got anything you want to say? All right. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thank
all
you,
guys. Thank you.
Bye. Hope you enjoyed it.
Next discussion and consideration of the Director of External Operations and County Services job description. There's actually two items, so we'll deal with that one first. And the second one is same thing, but with County Outreach and Special Projects Manager job description, HR Director and Director of Internal Operations, Alyssa Rickall. Hi, Alyssa.
Morning, Alyssa. Last person to say, you wanted to go.
Yes, there are two items on here. They are a little bit different process than we typically handle. These two positions currently directly report to the Board of Supervisors, so any changes to their job descriptions, discussions obviously has to happen in a board meeting. So I went through on the Director of External Operations, very minimal job description changes with the hiring of a risk manager. the insurance, county liability and general insurance, and any risk management will be pulled out of this job description and is now will be handled by the risk manager. Now, understand we do not have the risk manager hired, so this would be in the future once that position is hired and we have that individual on board.
Since you brought it up, where are we on that hiring process?
The position closes tomorrow.
All right.
I've done a review of applicants. We are hoping to schedule some interviews at the end of this week.
Next week.
And maybe the beginning of next week. Yeah. The end of this week, beginning of next week. First round. It really depends on how those interviews go. It's not an easy position to fill. It's pretty
hard. I expect it would be. Good luck.
I knew there was some questions. Okay. So, in moving outreach to special projects under external director of operations, was there discussion about with between the three of you in the pros and the cons yourselves about access to the board, direct access? Does this put another layer in for special projects? That type of thing. So, and I'm looking at our outreach and special projects manager to see if she has any thoughts about how this would change how the board would be able to interact on those functions.
Now, this would be it would be a change that would be consistent with how everything else is kind of the other positions are reported through the director, external and internal. It's a discussion. It's something that's placed in there. So it's up to, you know, the board really needs to have a discussion on how they want the structure of those positions placed. It would be up to the board, not the individuals in these positions. I think it really lies with the board as far as how they want that handled.
I have appreciated having direct access on special projects and communications. Okay.
So, just a question on that end. Right. I appreciate that, Morris. But do you feel like you don't have direct access to, say, Jerry Moore? So you had Jerry and Emily come up to talk
right.
to you.
Right.
Now, Jerry Moore reports through the director of external operations.
Right.
Do you feel like there's some kind of wall there that limits access beyond the same access you have to somebody else?
No, I don't. I made my own little internal list of pros and cons. I have been very appreciative. I picked that one up for you. Very appreciative of. Okay.
Right.
But I really liked how Leanne schedules her work,
uh-huh.
you know, and I want to make sure that we are not interfering with that, that we've still got enough autonomy that she's able to go ahead and manage over her own projects, that all three of us can bring those ideas to. And so it has been a little different arrangement. But no, I've not felt like I've never had access to any other director. I just have felt that with how the position of outreach and special projects manager has been structured, regardless of who serves it, I will say that I think it's well served right now and there's good communication.
Yeah, well, I agree with that completely. I think we're so well served if we are looking at individuals, right? So this is Deb Shildroff and Leanne Hart. We're so well served. I mean, we've got as capable of people in those two positions as possibly can. I would ask us to just elevate the way we're looking at this to the position rather than the person, and say what structure is most beneficial to the county. And I'll just say this, stepping back, and Alyssa, I'd ask you to comment on this. When we originally created, so we created the outreach and special projects position first.
Mm-hmm.
And then we came back, and about a year later, I think, we created the director of internal operations and the director of external operations. And at that time, there was so many special projects on our special projects manager's plate, and the fact that we didn't have anywhere for the insurance to go, and we had loaded down our director of external operations, we made the decision at that time that we would leave the special projects and outreach kind of on an island by itself. Now the conversation, as I understand it, is how do we best support that position so that they can continue to do the unbelievable work that they're doing now and in the future.
Okay. That's accurate. Yep. So, and there were a lot of unknowns. I mean, when you create a new position with both of these positions, going into that, there are so many unknowns. You don't know how that position is going to grow. You don't know exactly what else is going to be assigned to that position. So I think both of those have played a part in this. Now, in my conversations about the director of external operations, you know, with Deb, I do have conversations as far as workload, pulling out the insurance. There is a lot to that component that position handles right now, a lot of day-to-day stuff. So by pulling that out of that position does leave the possibility to restructure this, if that's the direction the board wants to go.
And that's my second concern about that. Both of these positions work a lot of hours. All right, you know, there's a lot on each of these plates. Okay, and my concern in shifting that direct reporting over external operations and county services, if that in, you know, we have the unintended consequences of even adding more to both of their places, as now county outreach and special projects has to report through somebody else. Occasionally, and see if that, we don't know that, but I certainly am concerned with so much is under Director of External Operations and County Services, which is going to lead me to my third point.
Well, let's stop with that one.
Oh, okay.
So as I understand the intent here, Alyssa, is it's supposed to do just the opposite in terms of our special projects and outreach position. It's supposed to give them a layer of support to help them really be able to focus in. It's not intended to create any additional work. In fact, it's supposed to be just opposite. As far as for the Director of External Operations, the only reason we're having this conversation right now is because there is a substantial component within the current job description that's rolling out with the hiring of a new safety director, which actually is going to report through Director of Internal Operations.
Right.
And it creates that gap that allows, and I mean, what you're charged with in this, Alyssa, is to make sure that it's full-time, a full-time job, full-time responsibility, but not unrealistic in terms of full-time.
So can you help me with that transition about what would we be alleviating for the county outreach and special projects manager that would shift to, I guess, external operations and county services?
It's the reporting structure. Instead of, ultimately, the department heads that report to us meet with us. We don't, any big items come to the board, but the little day-to-day operation stuff is handled.
And I think we all know I've struggled with that, and part of it has to do with there's so much that I think, at least I can glean. We all have our own thinking style. We all have our own
set of
information. Okay. But I often will hear a comment made by a staff member who would not be in a direct report, and I go, that's a thought. I want to follow up on it at a different level. So for me, I just have always viewed that when you put additional reporting layers between people, me and you, the two of you, and people who are actually doing the work, I'm concerned that sometimes we lose the information. We lose that comment that might trigger something inside of us to go, oh, wait a minute, I hadn't thought about that, or I hadn't thought about asking about that. So that's different than you have access to information. That has to do with the whole flow of information and thought process going back and forth. So I'm just asking, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's a great question, and I would just try to answer it like this. So we got Darren Moon sitting right here, who for years, the county engineer reported straight to the board, and when we went to this new system, the engineer started reporting through the Director of External Operations. That does not for one second mean that Deb's involved in designing bridges or designing roads or Darren's running his daily work through her. What it means is that when there's a question or there's an issue that involves the county engineer that's more administrative, he's got a one-stop place to go to keep informed that can then get the information to and from the board. The problem with the Board of Supervisors is we only get to take action on Tuesdays. There's a lot that happens in Story County from Wednesday through Monday that we need to have the ability to operate on, and I think this is fair, Darren, I'm not asking you to comment, but maybe a nod of the head one way or another. I think we found the structure to be beneficial in terms of the administrative support it gives you so that you can do your job. Fair?
Yeah.
And so he answered the affirmative. I think we get the same response from Jared Hoare. I think we get the same response. Jovi is new in the position, but I think we have gotten the same response from Cal. I think we get the same response from Barb. The intent, and I believe in practice, it's freeing up our staff to do their job. And when there's a question or concern, they've got one stop. If they're internal, they're Alyssa. If they're external, they're Deb. And it's Alyssa and Deb's responsibility to get that information to the board, to make sure that the board is able to weigh in on the areas the board needs to weigh in on. And what I've noticed is Leanne has not had that same kind of support. The position of County Outreach and Special Projects has not had that same kind of support, and it creates uncertainty. That I'm hoping, I think, as you guys were digging into this, that's what you're trying to deal with.
That's correct. And Morrison, it is more of an administrative, it's more of a support role for those directors and those individuals in that capacity. For what I do, I don't act outside of the scope of what my duties are. I still come to the board and ask, okay, we'd like to go in this direction. I need that authority from the board in order to do that. I can't create policies on my own or do different things. But I can act within the scope that is given to me and help the administrative stuff. So we're not bringing every little
100%. So and I'm going to use Jovi since he's sitting here. So Jovi has a question about the right way to handle something. And he's got one stop that he makes with Alyssa. And Alyssa determines, and I believe rightly determines, whether it fits within existing policy, existing practice, and she can make the decision and get Jovi moving again, or it needs to come to the board for action. Whereas our old process was, all right, how are you going to do it? You're going to talk to each supervisor one at a time and create a walking board? How are you going to do it?
Yeah.
And it was the entire impetus behind creating the system, and this to me is the discussion of the final piece of that. We got a position that was intentionally left out of this new structure. You've only got internal and external, right? And special projects and community outreach is clearly an external kind of function, but we left it out for multiple reasons. One of them you hit on. We had loaded up the job description of the director of external, and we did not have an opportunity to reasonably fit this in. Now we do, and that's why it's worth having the conversation.
Okay. So my final comment here then related to external operations county services is that wording has been changed in under the general definition of work, and it's the last sentence up there. It makes me uncomfortable. Provide leadership and management to the organization as a whole. That's what we elected to do. Where the old one listed those types, like the different departments or positions that report to the director of external operations and county services. So the way that this is worded, I feel creates a county manager, and there's already some confusion out there in the community. I've had multiple people call our employee the county manager, and I'll go back and say, no, she's not the county manager, she's a director of external operations. So there are two ways I view this. One is we could take the same language and also add it to Alyssa's job description. I'm sorry, to the director of internal operations. Okay,
sure.
Job description. So that both of them are equally providing leadership and management to the organization as a whole. And so I'm comfortable with that when we've got these two positions who are doing that. I'm not comfortable with only one position.
Sure.
Only
what would be the change? Okay.
We just updated our database, and when we put in that they have oversight over those, this is the general language. Now,
okay.
If I need to change it, I cannot manipulate our
No, but I think what Morris is getting makes a lot of sense. Put the same exact wording in both of those two job descriptions, because it is, so it's reasonable to view those two positions, Morris, as a pseudo county manager. It's not a true county manager because you don't have any of the elected offices that report to them. They're all autonomous and everything like that. But it is reasonable in terms of responsibility to view those two positions as filling that role. And so if we want to put that in both of them, I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. One thing I do want to point out is that sentence right above it. It says under the, work involves setting policies and goals under the direction of the Board of Supervisors. So this position does not have the authority true county manager,
right,
or that type of.
And what would be really great is also if both of new job descriptions, internal and external, we list what departments to report, at, you know, because of the change.
And I can change that.
And that word even. So I like it. It's just, it clarifies. I help. I think it helps people. It's not going to help out on the street because I guess we have to get you out more. Or whatever it is. But, you know, so that's where I was.
One thing that was left out in the draft that was on the agenda, on all of our job descriptions under education experience, it says the last sentence is or equivalent combination of education experience. That was a glitch in the new, I'm still trying to figure out this new database that's not pulling everything through for some reason. So that I did add that into the final draft. We put that in there because you know, the board needs the flexibility when they hire this position. Yes, it says it requires a master's degree, but you might have somebody come in with 25 years of experience, and that would waive that degree requirement. So we put that as a standard language and all. For some reason, it didn't pull through on either of them.
Well, I just want to make note, I had briefly inquired about should we hold this since our current holder of the position, okay, wasn't able to be here to provide input on it, but I understand.
I visited with her, she's supportive. We're going to give Leanne an opportunity to come up here in just a minute and give her thoughts on this. Again, underscoring that we're talking about the position, not the person in the position, there was comfort from Deb Shildroth in that it's a reasonable request and that it fits with what she's currently doing.
And the only other thing is I did not propose any other changes. I mean, that's up to the board as far as the essential functions, how they're written. They're written very broad so that you can give direction to the individual in that capacity so that every time a new project or a new committee they're assigned to, we're not updating that job description every single time something new pops up. The essential functions are written in that broad sense so that you guys have that.
Well, and that's more of a work program, which actually Leanne does a phenomenal job.
Great job on it.
As good as I've ever seen, bringing forward the work program. This is intended to be really, really broad. And I hope nobody falls into the trap of reading these and thinking, oh, that's all they do. They do all the things related to these.
Plus other duties of this kind that aren't even fall underneath.
We don't ever do that in BLS.
There's a few things.
Anything else for Alyssa?
No.
Leanne, you don't have to, but you got an opportunity to come up and talk to us about this if you'd like to. We're talking about both, and we can't take action of one without the other because they're interrelated.
Right together, right.
So I want to have this conversation before we get to either one.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. There are definitely pros and cons on both alternatives before the board for your consider. And as Alyssa said, it definitely does lie to your decision and take my input, whoever that may be. I've operated since 2000, almost 4 years now, under this current structure. I think it works very well. I appreciate the ability to come to each of you, being careful not to create a walking quorum. But, I mean, I have different projects with each of you going on, and I appreciate that ability. It's six of one, half dozen of the other. I think my position is sometimes seen more as beyond those helping those departments that help outside the walls here, though, but I do a lot to help internal.
Absolutely.
So it actually could fall under both, and which is why I like it being out there on its own, too. So for whatever it's worth, those are my words. So
absolutely. Yeah, well, and I think it's a great point. And the beauty we have is we've got a team that works really, really well together. I think it's one of the reasons that it's so appropriate, as Supervisor Olson suggested, that we make sure we have the same language in both internal and external in terms of providing leadership for the county. I think there absolutely are pros and cons, and Leanne, I absolutely hear you. I just come down firmly believing that the administrative support and consistency that we can get through the system now that we're able, with safety rolling out from under the external, outweighs any of the other things. And I'm not one that I believe that all of a sudden some kind of magic gate is going to appear and you don't get to stick your head in to visit with the supervisor. I mean, we have all of our staff. If Darren Moon needs something from us, or Darren Moore needs something from us, or anything like that, we deal with those. They just have a good, solid support structure when there's a question to work through it. So, appreciate your thoughts. Questions or comments from either of you?
Well, I would just say that if we do find, I was part of 5149. The 51 that we did it alone, okay. But I've been asked to take jumps of faith before, all right. If we do find that for some reason or a combination thereof that we've interrupted that flow of the ability to feed those special projects in, to have that fluidity, then that we bring it back to the
sure.
board. Okay.
Nothing's ever in stone.
Yeah. Oh,
we don't have all the answers. We don't know how it's going to work.
Yeah.
But I always, you know, same with any policies. We can bring a policy and learn 6 months later that what we put in that policy is not working and doesn't do what we wanted it to. So there's always that change.
We had a conversation the first thing this morning about unintended consequences with the urban fringe plan. Those things do happen, but in my mind, it doesn't excuse you from trying to put the best structure you can in place. And the beauty for you, Loris, is you've gotten to witness this from both sides of the table all the way through, and you really, and I don't think I'm putting words in your mouth, you really started in a position where you were dead set against the creation of any of these positions on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you've come all the way to appreciating the creation of them, you sure start to see the full spectrum of the benefits that it can offer. Is
right.
that fair?
That's fair. And I think really, you know, it's about filling them without advertising. That's a whole other discussion. I certainly have not been disappointed in anybody's performance. And that's okay. So, Leanne, thank you for being willing to come up here and say that, six of one half a dozen the other. So please feedback to if it's not working, to whoever you trust, okay, on this. And meanwhile, guess we'll see how it goes. Okay? So you need a motion, right?
Well, Marty, your thoughts first.
No, I think the big thing we did was we hired a risk manager. This is nothing more than streamlining on a smaller scale the operation that was already put in place in regards to position creation, not the least of which is Alyssa's, that now we're seeing as we evolve, and I think it is an evolution. This board or the next board will always have the ability to reach back and move on it if they see either inaction or dysfunction. I understand why you spoke to it, and I understand why you would be 5149, but this board will always retain the ability to configure this office the way it wants. I think Leanne makes a salient point as far as the autonomy, but I also have the comfort in watching Deb operate in the capacity that she does, as she turns into a one-stop shop, and I don't think that we would be ill-served to have her as a direct report. So I would make the motion. Are we going to do this?
One at a time.
One at a time. I would make the motion to move consideration of Director of External Operations and County Services job description as we provided by HR today.
Move second. Motion and second. Further discussion.
Can I ask if you want a definite date to go in? Do you want to just hold it out until we get the risk manager hired? Do you want to make it July 1st? We're close enough to July 1st that I think that would give the risk manager time to get in, get activated.
Yeah, so my suggestion would be, and it's a great question, thank you, Alyssa, it would be July 1st that this takes effect.
Okay.
Marty, are you okay with that?
Certainly, I do.
But make that part of your motion.
Okay, then I would make that motion that I just laid out effective July 1, 2018.
And I agree. Second.
Second on that. So, Director of External Operations as presented today, effective July 1st. Anything further? Ginny?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Now, outreach and special projects.
I just want to point out a couple things. Again, the same thing was the education, the equivalent. Also, in the beginning of the job description that was posted on the agenda, it said performs difficult professional work. It's complex. It's been complex. for some reason, when complex is pushed in the access database, it's not generating it through to the Word. So that has been fixed. I am pulling my hair out with this new, but I'm going to get it all figured out. Fortunately, I'll probably have to go through about 100 different job descriptions to make sure everything is good. But and then the other minor edits, we took out assist with EEOC requirements concerning grant administration that is not currently done. All the EEOC requirements and reporting is done through my position. And then develops and manages the operating budget. When we first developed this position, Outreach had their own budget. We have since then pulled it under the Board of Supervisors. Leanne does provide the estimates and give them, but our positions oversee those budgets. So that was removed.
And we've got
to lift
up to 25
pounds instead of 10 pounds. She does have some different things, but that 10-pound lifting, it doesn't take much time. So I do want to note that it does not change anything with the grading. It doesn't for either of the positions. So they are very minor changes.
Okay.
I would move for the changes in the County Outreach and Special Projects Manager job description as presented by staff today.
So,
as an effective July 1st.
Second. Motion to the second. Further discussion.
Yeah.
Olson.
Aye.
Keith.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes as presented today. Thanks for listening. Next is discussion consideration of strategic planning process. The aforementioned Leanne Hart. It was like just yesterday that we did the strategic plan. Maybe not for Laura Sabardi, but for me it does. We're going to have to get new things on the wall.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to reiterate, given the time, what was in the memo, but it is that time. We're running kind of the tail end of the current strategic plan. As mentioned, synopsis is on the wall. This was originally started in 2013. We worked with ISAC to be a pilot program, actually, to bring the the Institute of Public Affairs to the University of Iowa here. We paid some of that portion, and ISAC paid the remainder. So I'm here before you today is, and if you want to just look at the second page of the memo, there's two options. There's several options. I just came up with two different options for your consideration. One, as was done 3 years ago, the update of the strategic plan could be done internally through staff, county staff, and then it could be consultant-led, as we did in the initial in 2013. So that's for your consideration. Either one, I think we really need to be kicking it off in late March and get this filled out by the end of the fiscal year. We have a new strategic plan in place. Whatever process is decided upon, too, it would obviously be beyond just the Board of Supervisors, involving all the elected officials and department heads for the process.
So we brought in a consultant, I mean, largely funded by ISAC in 13, but then in 15, we basically ran with what we had in 13 and updated it in-house. My gut feel would be it's time to get an external set of eyes on it again and just see where we are and almost start to think, and I'm not saying formally adopt this, but almost start to think in terms of outside eyes, update it once internally, outside eyes, update it once internally, and move ahead with that. Lynn, what are your thoughts on that concept?
That's really why I got to the consultant-led. The process that occurred 3 years ago, I think, was very, we achieved very good results. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a stronger strategic plan than that was initially developed.
Right.
And there still is a role for staff with consultant-led. There's still staff ultimately designing the final product. But I think there is some justification bringing outside set of eyes in every so often, if that's rotating one after another or just one every third, whatever that is to be determined. I did also, I forgot to mention this, I gave you guys before the meeting copies of two programs, the Institute for Decision Making through UNI. They actually helped Stray County define our vision when we kicked off the C2C plan They come in and do strategic planning. In fact, Ames Chamber and Economic Development Commission has used them in the past for their strategic plan. And I asked Dan Colhane how much he thought that was. He thought it was like $6,000, and they did several sessions. And then I went back and looked at Jeff Schott with the University of Iowa's Institute of Public Affairs, and we would be, for one visit around the 2,600, probably need another visit too. So you know, $4,000 to $6,000. Again, non-budgeted though. We didn't, this actually didn't come up through the budgeting process.
I also like the idea of going for an outside facilitator again. It brings some freshness, somebody who is doing this with other government entities, so you never know what they can add or thought where they lead us. It helps, I think, compound the fact that there are two new supervisors in the thinking process, you know, but helps bring that in. And I was impressed with IDEA, because I sat through, the visioning process was part of that. And well, I'm not familiar with University of Iowa, but I felt that conversations were direct or focused well by IBM as they conducted the visioning sessions. We certainly have a place to start. We have experienced staff who's been through before, but I still feel having that outside facilitator is a good way to go this time.
Mm-hmm. I picked out those two, and those are equal programs.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had nothing but very positive interactions with both programs. IDM now has a new head that I had an opportunity to work with the individual, but one of the project managers that works for Ray County is still there. And Jeff is still with the University of Iowa Institute of Public Affairs.
There's no remember him.
Yeah, there are local individuals though, yeah, that do this too, which I'm not going to throw names out there, but I mean, that's another option to contract with someone locally that's a trained facilitator to come in and do it.
So my suggestion would be that we give direction today that it's time to start moving on this, and it's our intent to have a consultant-led study, but then it would be direction to Leanne to create the parameters for what we'd be looking for from that outside leader, and then get it out and see what kind of bids we get back to take us through the process. The beauty for us today versus 2013, we were dealing with a blank sheet of paper. I mean, we didn't have anything. Now, you look at what's been put in place, we've got a solid foundation to build this plan from. In many ways, that's going to make it easier, but it's also going to allow us to get a little more in-depth. I mean, we were just creating that initial vision, that initial plan back in 2013. Now we get to actually dig in and get in-depth is what I see. Of course, I think it's completely appropriate for us to go external. I just like to see us, Leanne, have the parameters of, you know, you gave some bullet points of what it is. Expand on that a little bit, and let's get something approved, and then get it out and see who would be interested in providing that.
I agree. And as you were talking about, this also, of course, the C2C plan will, you know, be brought into this.
Like I said, we're light years ahead.
So, okay, so the motion would be to, or do we even need a motion to direct staff?
Yeah, I think make the motion.
So direct staff to further flesh out what we would be looking for with strategic planning and put together for us an RFP that we can approve and then staff can put out to see who responds.
Do we have to follow the RFP process? Yeah. Or maybe just do a solicitation bid?
Yes.
Let's do a solicitation bid. Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to amend my motion to solicitation or bid.
I would second that. My question is, you had said earlier that you'd like me to be moving on this at the end of a month's time. Is that doable?
Yeah. My plan all along was if you went with alternative to, or the consultant-led option, was to be back to you in a month with a description of the process, being ready to go out for bid with it.
and I've already seconded it.
Perfect. All right, so just so we're clear, it is a month from now, or thereabouts, Leanne will come back with kind of the parameters of going out, requesting people put in some bids. A little more informal than a full-fledged request for proposal, but we'll request bids. We'll see what we get back, and we'll get moving on this. Leanne, that clear? Anything further?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you, Leanne.
Other reports, insurance update. Let's see. So,
welcome back.
Yeah.
The way we budgeted this year, we knew we were going to get a pretty substantial increase in our health insurance. Our initial bid came back, and it was even more substantial than we thought it was going to be. So we've been working, Alyssa's been working with our insurance consultant on the process. You want to give us an update?
Sure, sure. Yeah, our renewal came back probably about 10% higher than what we were anticipating. We have done a full and exhaustive due diligence with the company. The applicable companies aren't, there's not a huge pool in Iowa. Obviously, it's Walmart and United Healthcare. The next step, we've got the initial stuff back. We are reviewing it. Both Debbie, our broker, and myself will review it to make sure they quoted our product. Our plan design will stay. We have it in some union contracts. We have it for our employees. We like the benefit that the insurance offers. So we are not proposing any plan design changes. So we have asked, when we took it out for bid, we have asked that they quote the two current plans that we have. In addition to that, we have also had, Aetna has provided with a renewal, and because we knew we were going to get a fairly high renewal based on utilization. We did get some quotes for a partial self-funding option that may come before the board. We could have looked at full self-insurance at this point. That is not something that I would recommend. We go to July 1st. I think we need a little bit more time, especially with the high claims that we had this past year. What I will say is that I can't release any of the bids yet because we're not done. The process is the bids come in, and our broker goes back and says, is this your best bid? Then they compete against each other. That's kind of how it plays. So we will go back to Aetna, ask them to sharpen their pencil to see if there is any move. There is some negotiating on that end. We do like to keep everything as consistent as we possibly can for employees. It would not be my wish to come here every March and try to change carriers. We want to provide some consistency to our employees. What we have to do is when we get a large rate increase like that, we do need to take it out for bid and get everything.
But fair to say, while we can't get into specifics, move trending in a good direction
right.
of where it started. And for our employees, what our employees need to know is we're not talking about a change in plan coverage, and we're not even talking about a substantial change in employee contributions where we are.
The percentages are locked in. Yeah. So what we're trying to do, and with the partial self-funding, that doesn't change the necessarily increase that we have. What it does is it puts the county in a really good position for future years so that we're not getting these large. When you get into a partial self-funding, you have a little more control over the renewal.
Right. But any move to any level of self-funding requires full board
right.
action. So we can't, nope. we won't get there without a full discussion here.
And what we'll do is we'll come back once we know the rates are as good as they can possibly get to be. We will come back with all those rates for the board and have the board make a decision as to whether what you guys want to do. Sometimes, the employer does not move the group for 1 or 2 points on a renewal. It just depends
what
the board wants to do.
Questions that Alyssa can appropriately answer.
Estimated time frame before having this discussion.
We should, by the end of this month, talking to Debbie, I talk to her probably a few times every day, our broker. Debbie Dean is our broker from Benefit Source. We should have everything pretty much, the quotes and everything finalized by the end of the week, if not the beginning of next week. Now the issue that we have, there's a limited agenda
when nothing will come to us on the 13th regarding this, so it's going to be
March 20th.
We'll deal with this.
And that gives us a little more time. When we get the partial self-funding, I do want a little more time to do some more analytical, exposure risk analysis. That's not something that I would want to just get one day and come to the board with a recommendation the next day. So.
And just to clarify, this is all effective July 1st, whatever happens. So we got some time to deal with this. Questions for Alyssa?
Nothing is pretty sobering when you look at a renewal of almost 30%. It causes you to have fierce conversations in the sense that we were wise to start making a step towards partial self-funding. This only prompts the conversation. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that Alyssa taking our insurance to market will bring back a return that's a little more palatable, but I think we still have some pretty important things to do in behalf of the employees of Story County and the taxpayers of Story County here with what we do with our insurance in the coming year.
I think it's a great opportunity. And I think you said it really well. I think we made a really, really wise decision in our budgeting process to, instead of lowering the levy by 7 cents, only lowering it by 2 cents and build that extra nickel in just for an eventuality like this. It puts us in a really tenable position. I mean, we can figure this out. And this can be a real positive. And it's a great opportunity to have this conversation.
We have a great group, great side. We have 200 contracts, about 450 lives on the plan. So compared to where we were at three or four years ago with 32 contracts and maybe 38 lives on the plan, we had no options. Now we do have some options, and we'll just see where that takes us.
We've come a long way in a few years.
Yep.
All right. Anything else for Alyssa? Alyssa, thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. What you do.
Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on anything. We're not taking any action because we can't, but we might in the future. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Good morning, Linda.
How's everybody?
We're good.
Good. I just wanted to ask a question. I don't take very long here. And I'll put context on it. I just found out that Senate File 2081 is being debated by a subcommittee of House Appropriations at 4 o'clock today, and that's the bill reducing the backfill.
By two-thirds this year in 19 and by the final
third
in 20.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was just wondering, I'm trying to contact some legislators about it, and I have contacted a few. What is the amount for the county next year?
We're just over $700,000 total.
$710,000.
So it would reduce us, the number I saw this morning. We would go from $710,000 to $488,000 in backfill based on this proposal. I will just underscore that this proposal is, in fact, in subcommittee. It's something that we, so that anybody who hasn't reached out, I reached out to Majority Leader Bill Dix today and just expressed my displeasure that they would allow counties to get to the end of their budgeting process and then say, oh, by the way, we're going to take two-thirds of this. I've been all along, so I felt pretty strongly that the backfill is not permanent. It's just it never – they said it was permanent, but it's not permanent. And the reality is if they were to institute something that began in, like, 2020 where we could budget to accommodate it, and spread it out over 5 years or so, it's something that most counties could accommodate. This idea of taking two-thirds of it in a budget year where we've already established budgets, Linda, I just think it's the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard of, and I'm hoping that it dies a quick death in the Senate. I will tell you this, the House has not shown any, this is not any conversation that has been picked up in the House yet, and Governor Reynolds has indicated that she is against anything that impacts counties in FY19. Now, all that said, until you see a bill come out, you don't know what's going to happen. But I went to work this morning lobbying against this bill. I'd encourage anybody else who wants to reach out to do the same. It's a fairly major impact. And for other that doesn't include the way it impacts our local municipalities and our school districts, because it hits all of them similar. Mm-hmm. It's about $1 million, just over $1 million for the city of Ames. I think our estimates were somewhere close to $3 million total in Story County when you add up all our municipalities. School districts, that doesn't include them. It's a major deal, and the idea that you would wait until March 1st to all of a sudden say, oh, by the way, we're going to take two-thirds of the money that we told you was coming. You built your budgets based on that money coming. And Story County is actually lucky. We could, if it happened, we could accommodate it more easily than some of the smaller counties.
And let me ask you just a couple questions. I agree totally with what you're saying, Rick. Did you say the $3 million was all of Story County?
I think that is county and all of our municipalities.
But not, it would not be the school.
But not the school district.
Okay. I did reach out to my senator and received a message back from him, which was, oh, well, that didn't come out of subcommittee, so that's not being dealt with, which is kind of disingenuous since it's an appropriations bill, and it's going to be dealt with any time. So
it's alive and well. There's actually a call on all three of our computers back there. Laura's Marty, do you haven't checked your email from ISAC to reach out? It's the first call I made this morning when I got in. It's a big deal if it gains traction. The inside baseball of this, Linda, is when the proposal came out, it came out from a senator that puts a lot of things out that don't gain traction usually. And so it wasn't taken real seriously at first, and then got assigned to a subcommittee, which then all of a sudden everybody's ears perked up.
So is it the same subcommittee that's listed on...
I don't know that.
Okay. Okay. Well, that helps me.
Okay.
Thank you very much for providing that information.
Sure.
Okay. Well, goodness gracious. I did not look at my email first thing.
I heard it at city council last night in Nevada, and I was just like, no, wait a minute. The governor told us in the state of the state this was you're held harmless. Now going forward, it was going to be
right on
the table.
Well, but the governor can mean that, and the Senate can do something different, and then they start to, you just don't know where it ends up.
Yes,
and it's why I believe we've got to use whatever minimal influence we have early in the process just to try to make everybody understand the kind of impact that. And again, I'll underscore, it doesn't hit Story County as hard as it hits Boone County because we've got more wherewithal to absorb it. But don't you guys know the budget? Pull $300,000 out of the budget. And you, I mean, we're making some decisions. We're not talking about buying new equipment for the sheriff's offices, things like that, right? So it hits us pretty hard. Anybody else have anything further? Okay, the liaison time is Marty.
Personal note, Rick lost his mother-in-law yesterday, so sympathies from me and mine to Rick and his wife, Callie. I'd like to say thank you to Lucy Martin for helping run a rather mildly raucous but yet informative 3-plus-hour township meeting last Wednesday here in this room. And surprisingly enough, there was a great deal of takeaways, and I expect a lot of good things out of it. I was at the city council meeting in Nevada last night, and they touched upon three items that I find interesting that you might want to hear about. The rec center discussion is now moving. The Leanne can tell you what she did on behalf of Nevada schools last night. That will be coming to pass. They would have done their financial testing. They have the ability to do it, and you will likely see here in the next several years a new baseball field and a rec facility in Score Park out by the pool. They are in their jump-off point of developing a disaster plan, and they have got it was a cold water shock to them as far as where they're at. They had some discussions, but they did not realize to the degree that it would involve them as a council and as a city, so I look forward to seeing how that goes. They spoke of the DuPont status in regards to where it would be at on a tax revenue basis to the city, that the potentials are that DuPont wishing to sell the facility to anybody else as an agreed-upon valuation amount, and the city's pushback would be they wouldn't be made whole on any expenses expended on DuPont's behalf to come here, but that in turn would probably see a lessening of the valuation of the plant, and there was made mention that there was a potential buyer with no names attached. Spent a day last week at the Capitol with the Ames Boys and Girls Club. Had a wonderful time. We were very well attended. People were coming up, and we had the opportunity to expand our vision. But just strangers that would come up, and they wanted free food. Well, they had to talk to us to get it. had a conversation with the city council member in regards to housing through the housing commission here in Story County, and I would turn to you, Laura, as you sit there and say, well, what did they say? Talk to Brenda Dreyer, she's pushing paperwork to them to that effect. Bolton Meng said their open house last night, very well attended. We'll be leaning on them quite heavily with the Grant 5 Drainage District thing that we'll be confronting here about the 20th of next month. And on a personal note, my coffee maker died this morning, and I only had one cup of coffee.
Oh, no. It has been
an odd morning. I have not got the caffeine. I need to be an effective administrator.
Thanks, Marty.
Okay, I'll keep it short. First thing, everybody only has 2 days left to go adopt a fabulous feline in February for $10. Did finally get the little minute video on to see what it goes to. Cute cats. Okay. Last week I attended the 100 collaboration meeting, and the key point to come out of that is the collaboration moves forward. They want to find, or we want to find, a measurable type of statistic so to see the impact 1 year later. And United Way, of course, is working with that, and a United Way employee is acting as the liaison between the United Way board and the 100 collaborations and others. And the selected statistic we pulled out was from Feeding America, that their estimate in Story County is that 213,000 meals are missed every month in Story County. And in the summertime, that's down. We're only meeting 1/4 of the need of meals. And in the best that we tend to do, according to the tracking that's being done by United Way of all the food pantries and Food at First, and actually there's quite significant tracking being done, is that we might get up to 57% around Christmas time. But 213,000 meals a month are being missed. So as the collaboration moves forward, it's trying to pinpoint how they can still push higher, more meals out, and what that has to do, I'll come back to you. And then Friday, after the assessor's recognition for the great work they do, I'll be at the Wellness Collaboration all day, which is focused with kids 0 to 8, to see what we can do to improve outcomes for them.
Thanks, Mari. Appreciate your thoughts on Callie's mom passing. I'll be leaving this meeting, and we're headed for Montana to take care of that. And I'll be out next week in Washington D.C. at National Association of County meeting, representing us and ISAC there. And I know you guys will have a short meeting next week, and then Laura, I understand you're going to be cruising somewhere by the time I get back, and so we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
If there's nothing further, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.